To the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. It was good to be back in the pulpit yesterday after traveling across the country with my brother, Brian Enyart, on a mission to family back east. And what a time we had. It was great. And I'm so thankful for the crew here at BEL handling the broadcast and the operation while I was gone, and also at Denver Bible Church. We passed a minor YouTube milestone while I was traveling, 500,000 views on the Bob and Yurt Live YouTube channel. We're up to 574,000 views on YouTube. That's fun. Later in the show, I'd like to read a couple comments to one of our science videos, and they're insulting comments, right? People who disagree, who want to discount something that a Christian talk show host presents only because it's a Christian talk show host. So I want to read that and then my response. And also an email from Tom Healy. For those of you who have been tuning in, we've done 5 programs with Tom. He has cancer and his oncologist gave him just a few months left to live. I want to give you an update on Tom, but then also an email he sent me about C.S. Lewis, when as a child, he lost his faith to bad teaching. And this has to do with one of the 5 shows we did with Tom on healings and miracles, when C.S. Lewis' mother died of cancer when he was 9 years old. And he and his brother were praying for her to be healed, as they were taught to by Christians around them. So I want to read that email. And then also just a quick comment perhaps on the Roy Moore campaign in Alabama when he was running for U.S. Senate. He lost to the Democrat, pro-abort, you know, the child-killing socialist Democrat. And if you recall the accusations that came out against Roy Moore from a number of women, all these accusations, all consistent, some with corroborating evidence. And then the latest news from the New York Times and elsewhere that the Democrats were guilty of fake news during that campaign, putting out fake news against Roy Moore. And of course, that's expected. It's pathetic. It's true. But it also had nothing to do with the sex scandal accusations. So those are 2 separate issues that we do need to recall. And I'd like to personally invite you to the Colorado Right to Life March for Abolition coming up a week from Saturday. It's that time of the year already. And please come out if you can. This is the only, you know, the March for Lives that are held around the country. This is the only one. This is called the March for Abolition. And it's the only one held at an abortion mill. So in Denver, at Planned Parenthood, and that's a block off Quebec Street, just south of I-70 in Quebec. Easy to find, Quebec and 38th at Planned Parenthood. So we'll be there Saturday, January 19th, that's a week from this Saturday, at 10 o'clock. And we'll have a great time. And when the March for Abolition is done, then we'll walk just those couple blocks for whoever would like to and hold our signs right there on Quebec. So even many more people will see this effort to call attention to the cruelty of dismembering innocent children. And as God calls us to love our neighbor, and these children are the meekest and the most innocent of our neighbors, and they're being dismembered and otherwise discarded by, tragically, not only by the left and liberals, but many Christians. We know many people who go to supposedly good churches then go in for abortion, and much of it is being funded by Donald Trump and the Republican Party, because so far Trump has fully funded the abortion industry in America at Barack Obama levels. And that is consistent with Republican pro-life presidents for decades now. In fact, George W. Bush doubled the funding from Bill Clinton. He doubled it to Planned Parenthood. And then at that higher level of funding, it's continued till now. And Donald Trump, he's fighting for funding for the wall, right, with Mexico. But what's interesting is we give Planned Parenthood $500 million a year. We, the taxpayers, in federal tax dollars, that is only given to them under Donald Trump's signature. Without his signature, they cannot get that money. He could fight and say, I'm not going to sign, just like he's doing right now. I'm not going to do this unless you fund the wall. He has that power, but he hasn't fought at all to stop the funding of Planned Parenthood. And interestingly, he wants $5 billion for the wall, for part of the wall. Well, that would be defunding the abortion industry. Defund Planned Parenthood for 10 years, you get your $5 billion. They say they don't know where the money could come from. Well, that's one place it could come from. But even at that, you know, defunding Planned Parenthood is less than 0.1% of the battle. Because if conservatives ever did defund Planned Parenthood, that money would likely be replaced by billionaires who are pro-aborts, as are the vast majority of the billionaires in America. In fact, they'd probably double the funding within 24 hours. So defunding Planned Parenthood is nothing like abolishing abortion, and that's what needs to be done. But it's even harder now because Donald Trump has been nominating pro-abortion judges, justices to the U.S. Supreme Court, who reject that the unborn child has a right to life. So that just furthers the problem, extends it to where, what's the difference if the Democrats win or the Republicans win? They both fully fund abortion and they put judges on the court that reject the child's right to life. So that's where we're at. But please, if you can, I guarantee you the speaker at the Colorado Right to Life March for Abolition will not be a regulator and will not cover up the Republican funding of Planned Parenthood. The speaker, you might know this woman if you've been in the battle here in Colorado. I've known her for 20 years or so. Terry Augenbaugh, an extraordinary servant of the Lord Jesus Christ and a warrior against the killing of innocent children. So you'll want to come out to hear Terry and to be there, stand shoulder to shoulder with others who are fighting, not for a show and not to checkmark a list of requirements to run for some Republican office, but to actually be there to try to abolish abortion. Now to our dear friend, Tom Healy. What a career he's had and so many years supporting Bob and Yurt Live with his wife, Madeline. They've traveled with us abroad, just extraordinary people. And now that he's in his 80s, he's been diagnosed with cancer and told he had a few months left, going through all the typical treatments. His body stopped producing blood, no red blood cells from his marrow, no white blood cells, no antibodies. So not only has he needed blood transfusions for months now to live, but also, if he picked up an infection from someone, it could be fatal. So just a couple weeks ago now, Tom, his doctor had tried to get him onto a targeted antibodies treatment that is in trial, and it's very promising. You know, we have reported on targeted antibodies, and in fact, we've even made a prediction, a rather daring prediction, that cancer, which is the number two killer of Americans, by 2025, cancer would drop to be the number five killer. And so if that prediction turns out to be accurate, it will be an indicator of extraordinary success in the fight against that killer. And we still think that that prediction is valid and on target to being confirmed. But when Tom applied to be in this latest trial, they looked at him, and his family doctor says, Tom, you're strong as a horse. If it wasn't for this cancer, I mean, you got a strong heart, your whole body, you're doing great. But they put literally hundreds of millions of dollars into developing these treatments. And they're fighting with everything they have against cancer and trying to defeat it with using your body's own immune system with targeted antibodies. And because they've invested so much, and then they have a trial, and let's say there's 300 people in the trial, they really don't want someone who might end up during the trial dying of some other cause. That would really ruin the chances of finding out, you know, how well this is working or not. So because Tom is in his 80s, he didn't qualify for this trial. So when that happened, his oncologist said, well, why don't we do this other targeted antibody treatment? It's not right now in trial. It's actually available. So they just did that. And Tom and Madeline went in for his checkup. And his doctor said, well, I don't want you to get, you know, overly excited. You're still in real crisis, but your body is now producing red blood cells. Your body is producing red blood cells, antibodies, that's the white blood cells, to fight disease. And so they're at small numbers, but it's happening, and it hadn't happened for months. So this is rather extraordinary, quite an astounding development. And for people who've listened to our shows, including with experts on what it means to use targeted antibodies to fight the growth of abnormal cells, so your own immune system will recognize those cancerous cells, the tumors and so on, and attack them and destroy them. If you haven't heard any of that, it's so easy to get to on our website, kgov.com, kgov.com, and you could put targeted hyphen antibodies or just abbreviate it TA, kgov.com/TA. And you'll want to listen to that show and read the page and come up to speed with what's been going on. And it truly is extraordinary. Okay, so Tom Healy, he sent me this email. Since he and I did this program about healings and miracles and how it is so misrepresented by so many people. You know, what does the Bible tell us about miracles and healings? And what it tells us, I have done a survey of all the miracles in the Bible. We list them all in my book, My Life's Work, The Plot, An Overview of the Bible. In chapter 10, we have a table, list every single miracle, 343 miracles in the Bible, or miracle events. And what was the response of the people who received the miracles, who were the beneficiaries, or the people who witnessed the miracles? And overwhelmingly, the response was negative, or not positive. So much so that often the more miracles that Jesus did, or that Moses did, Elijah did, the more the people hated them. And that's surprising. A lot of Christians would think that miracles would tend to produce faith, but the Bible teaches that miracles foster unbelief and that faith only comes by hearing, not by sight. And why is that? Well, we lay all that out. And it's in the plot, chapter 10. Tom Healy and I talked about it. And so here's an email Tom sent me last night. Bob, I thought you'd find this interesting about C.S. Lewis. It's from the C.S. Lewis Institutes by Dr. Art Lindsley, The Early Life of C.S. Lewis. And Lewis is extraordinary. Who's that well-known podcast, Matt Walsh, who says about C.S. Lewis, he's his favorite human to walk the earth, you know, other than Jesus Christ. But I think I agree with that. Just extraordinary, C.S. Lewis. You know, the greatest scientist ever, Isaac Newton, Christian. Today's Isaac Newton, Walt Brown, Dr. Walt Brown. But so, here's from Dr. Art Lindsley. C.S. Lewis was age 9 and the year was 1908. His mother, Flora, had a hard case of cancer. She had a tumor in her abdomen. They lived in Ireland outside of Belfast, and a surgeon came and performed surgery in her bedroom. That's what life was like back then, right? There were two people, one a family member and another a nurse or housekeeper, who told young Jack and his brother, that's his lifelong nickname to his friends and family, Jack, C.S. Lewis, if you pray with enough faith, mom's going to be healed. Now that, by the way, that's fake news, or that's false. That's false teaching. It's tragic. It's destroyed many lives, that misinformation. But so let's continue. If you pray with enough faith, mom's going to be healed. That's setting someone up for a crisis of faith, right? They're misrepresenting the scriptures. The plot of the Bible, the story of the Bible, it turns out there's a plot twist. And there's a plot twist, for example, in the book of Jonah. 40 days in Nineveh will be destroyed. And then if you skip ahead, you find out Nineveh's not destroyed. And you ask, well, what happened? I thought it was going to be destroyed. If you miss the plot twist, then you're all confused. And so the same thing in the Bible. And if you miss the plot twist, you might be teaching out of one part of the Bible and hurting people terribly because the things you're telling them that God said, God didn't say to those people. So that's misrepresenting God. So this housekeeper who said to these two brothers, if you pray with enough faith, mom's going to be healed. I don't think the person was lying, because to be lying, you have to know what you're saying is wrong, but it was close enough to lying. It's false teaching. It's a false hope. Jack said that every morning he prayed, they prayed, other people prayed. They had Jesus' words quoted to them. Whatsoever you ask, remember in Mark chapter 11, whatsoever you ask, believing you shall receive, you shall obtain. Well, mom died, and the boys were devastated. Where was God? Is he not there? He sure didn't answer this prayer. And now, please forgive me if I can't quite tell where the account departs from Art Lindsay, the author, and where Tom Healy is making his own comments. But let me continue with the email. God sure didn't answer this prayer. What's this business with Jesus telling us to pray this way and we'll get this done? What's going on? He was devastated, and so was his brother. Their father, in the wake of their mother's death, went into a spiritual and psychological dark night that he never emerged from. They were young boys and men who not only lost their mother, but they essentially lost their father for all practical purposes. And imagine C.S. Lewis on his way to fight in World War I with enormously high casualty rates, and his dad didn't care enough to even go to the train to see him off as he went to be a platoon leader in the British Army and an infantry officer. Pain and prayer, each of the boys were given a Bible by their mother, her parting gift to her two boys. So C.S. Lewis would say later that what happened to him and his brother was like what happened to Huckleberry Finn. Remember, he was taught that if you pray, you'll have your prayers answered. And it didn't happen. So Huck said, I'm through with that stuff. And, you know, that Huckleberry Finn written by Mark Twain, who was Samuel Clemens, I remember years ago, the boys were young. We were looking for audiobooks to share with them. And I got Huckleberry Finn, and I thought, you know, let's listen to some of it before we share it with the kids. And the opening page, Mark Twain is mocking the woman that Huckleberry Finn lives with. I don't recall if it's his aunt or whoever, because she wants to pray over dinner. That's my recollection. Obviously, you could just look it up and read it. But it was clear to me that it was written by someone who hated God, who hated Jesus Christ. And so there's a tremendous amount of great literature. Well, there's C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy and his Chronicles of Narnia and so on, and so many other authors. And then there's even Lord of the Rings by Lewis' close friend, J.R.R. Tolkien. And by the way, when Will Duffy and I went to Oxford to prepare, do research for our debate against the King James only argument, we went to the pub that Lewis and Tolkien and their friends, they had a club, the Inklings, and they met at this pub weekly for years, and they would read their writings to one another from Lord of... Imagine being there with Tolkien reading about Frodo, right? And with C.S. Lewis reading about Aslan and all. Just so astounding. They critique one another's works. In that pub, I think it's called the Eagle and the Child, and I think they called it the Bird and the Babe or something like that, or just the Bird. And when you go there, it's just so iconic. The history is so rich. It just comes off the walls and hits you, and the food and the drink is great also. So what a good time Will Duffy and I had on that trip. You know, research, somebody's got to do it. So it was just great fun and very productive. And boy, did we slaughter that poor guy who was debating that the King James is the only version of God's word on earth. Almost as though Jesus spoke the King's English. So, Tom, thank you for that email. And yes, that was quite a difficulty and false teaching that C.S. Lewis had to overcome, to where he did finally come to the Lord. Another bit of false teaching he had to overcome was evolution and the godless, atheistic, materialist view of origins. And it's interesting that even as an atheist, C.S. Lewis saw the errors in that worldview, even as an atheist. So, and he became a strong and effective critic of Darwinian evolution. Okay, by the way, my producer just said to me today, if somebody's looking to get information regarding creation, evolution, and any of the related topics, the best way to search is to use the RSR custom search. It is so powerful. It truly is amazing. I use it all the time, and it's more powerful than Google, because it uses Google. It's built on the Google search engine, but it's RSR's multiple creation site search. And if you just Google a topic, let's say asteroids or peanut asteroids, for example, there's so much noise out on the internet. There might be thousands of articles, interesting, but not what you're looking for. But if you want to find results that are focused from the perspective of the creation evolution debate, then you go to rsr.org and click on the custom search, and it truly is phenomenal in how effective it is. It uses Google, but it searches only the leading creation websites, just a handful, a half a dozen or so. It is so powerful, and it saves so much time. I think you'll love it. And by the way, speaking of peanut asteroids, what's the latest TNO they have now photographed? It's so neat. New Horizons, when it went out and got those close-up photos and observations of Pluto, and how in the most extraordinary way it falsified the expectations of the atheist and NASA. NASA's always shocked, and we young Earth creationists who support the global flood and the fountains of the great deep model of the global flood, we're always celebrating because it's overtly affirming our worldview. So whereas the International Astronomical Union put out a graphic of what they thought Pluto would look like, and it looked like it was 4 billion years old, all beat up and covered in dirt and dust and grime, collecting dust for 4 billion years. That's what they thought it would look like. And what it actually looked like was astoundingly clean and fresh. And you could see that contrast, both of those photos together, at kgov.com/Pluto. So you could check that out. That's just so neat. And just like Saturn's rings, when NASA's lead scientist on Saturn's rings admit that they look so new because they're not all dirty and covered with dust, like you'd expect them to be if they're hundreds of millions, billions of years old. Well, they look new, like so much in the solar system looks new. And there is another mystery. NASA says, why are so many asteroids and other space objects, why are they two separate asteroids that have come together like binaries? We call them peanutoids because they look like peanuts. Astronomers have called them peanuts. They look like peanuts. Why are there so many peanutoids in this latest Ultima Thule? So their New Horizons spacecraft passed Pluto, and their plan was to go near one of these TNOs, these trans-Neptunian objects. And sure enough, they come up nice and close to Ultima Thule, and it's another peanutoid. It's a peanut-shaped. Actually, this one looks a bit more like a snowman. And so this is another working for Walt Brown discovery. All space probes work for Walt Brown. All scientists work for Walt Brown. All astronomers work for Walt Brown. It is truly astounding how exciting it is, because NASA admits, their scientist Donald Yeomans, he said this, it's a major mystery how two objects, each the size of skyscrapers, could collide without blowing each other to smithereens. This is especially puzzling in a region of the solar system where gravitational forces would normally involve collision speeds of 4,000 miles per hour. So you've got these two separate asteroids, basically asteroids. They're coming together. They should smash each other into smithereens, and the parts separate and never come back again, never in the history of the universe. But instead of blasting each other, they just come up and kiss each other and they merge. And then not only do they merge, but then the point that they connect gets, there's a whole bunch of debris that sort of cements those two parts together. And so how does that happen? Why does it happen? It's all an affirmation. It's all an affirmation of the young Earth and the hydroplate theory explanation of the global flood. By the way, kgov.com/comets, you could find out about that. I want to thank my producer for last week's series, 10 years ago, little about a decade ago, young Dylan Walborn. He was starved to death by the officials of Denver's Children's Hospital, telling the parents of this four-year-old boy, what was his crime? He had Down syndrome, and they starved him to death. It took 3 weeks for him to die after they stopped feeding him. They only gave him, I think, water. And they killed him. And we spoke to a doctor at the time. Was it a neurologist who said, to his knowledge, this was a tragic first in America where they starved to death a child. They euthanized the child who was handicapped. Just so devastating. But thank you guys for putting that together while I was traveling last week. Also, the Bob and Yurt Live monthly subscriptions, our Bible studies, audio or video, our sermons, audio or video, our monthly topical videos, the old Bob and Yurt Live TV shows, it's all available. Check it out. May God bless you.